For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And welcome back to Gwen and Chris. 4:01 is the time. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr. down at Petco Park. Adam Klug sitting in nicely today for Matt Scraby. If you're just tuned in, Matt had his shoulder surgery today. All went well. Recovering nicely at home. A little groggy from what we understand, but like, how did you know the difference between regular Scraby and groggy Scraby? Groggy Scraby. That's hard to say. He is hopefully going to be back with us on the program from home the rest of the week, but Adam's doing a nice job settling in for us. We got a little Chris versus the fans coming your way here. And, of course, we are working our way towards 5:30 in the EcoWater SoCal Padre pregame show starring Sam Levitt. He'll get you ready for Padres athletics. Padres coming in with a record of 34-35. Good enough for the second wild card in the National League right now. There are four teams, though, that are only a half game below the Padres. As a matter of fact, heaven forbid the Padres should lose two or three in a row, they could find themselves in no better than 12th or 13th place in just a couple of days. So it's a very, very tight race. Certainly served them better to win two or three in a row. We're not actually calling a sweep of the A's, are we? After all, the Padres are the only team in baseball that have yet to have a sweep this season. Find out starting tonight, 6:40 for the first pitch out at Petco Park. Couple of other quick things before we get to Chris versus the fans. Is Scottie Scheffler on the greatest run in golf history right now? He's heading into the U.S. Open this weekend at Pinehurst. And I was looking this up. He won the tournament over the weekend, the Memorial Tournament. This is unbelievable to me anyway. Maybe not to everybody, but I don't know. His last eight tournaments that he's played in since March. Thank you, Jim Nance. His last eight tournaments that he's played in since March, he's had 5 first place and 2 second place.
Is that good?
I think so.
Oh, and a prison sentence.
And a jail sentence. Yes, you're right. Thank you. The only tournament out of the eight that he did not finish first or second was the PGA Championship, and he finished 8th in that one.
Bum.
So, yeah, and that's because he had one really bad round in the middle. I don't know that Tiger Woods. Well, look, Byron Nelson won 11 in a row, but that's in the. That's even before I turn back time. Tiger Woods, I think, maybe got 5 in a row once, 6 in a row. Tiger was incredible in his heyday. I'd have to look that up. But this is really something. Scheffler, 5 first, 2 seconds in the last 8 starts. And that, of course, includes winning the Masters. Guy is it's not a roll. To put it lightly, I guess he's the favorite this weekend at the U.S. Open. Tiger Woods will be in the U.S. Open, by the way. I don't know how long. He didn't make it through the weekend at the PGA. All right, let's get to 833-288-0973. chance to win some prizes. Trivia, our style, Chris versus the fans.
If you had one shot, one opportunity to take down the human almanac himself.
Howdy do.
Now is your time.
Listen to me, this guy is dangerous.
Now is your opportunity to win a prize.
Well, I hope you know what you're in for.
Chris versus the fans starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, here we go with Chris versus the fans. I'm not sure exactly what we're playing for today. Adam Klug, are you aware of what prize are you giving away today?
Oh, is that what you were asking me just
now? That's what I was asking you just now. Do you know?
I'll tell you what. Let's give me a second.
I'll give you a second. You got to.
We will tell you on the back end. You're playing for something. It exists. We will tell you at some point.
The players of Chris versus the fans.
They play for pride, right?
They do. They play for pride. I think they would like to, get the prize along with it. But, yeah, it's a pride thing. Tiger Woods, most he ever won in a row. I'm looking it up here. 2006-07, he won 7 tournaments in a row. Wow. So as good as Scheffler is right now, not quite the Tiger. 7 in a row? Man. But still, 5-2-1 out of the money last 8.
If you take down Chris today in Chris versus the Fan, you qualify for a chance to win our grand prize, which is a 2-night stay at Fontainebleau Las Vegas. Tickets to either, meaning your choice, of Hootie and the Blowfish or the Smashing Pumpkins at the Blue Live Theater and $150 poolside dining credit. Summer room packages and tickets are available now at FontainebleauLasVegas.com.
$150 poolside credit. That's a lot of orders of French fries.
Doesn't suck.
Nothing like a French fry at the pool. All right, I said it. You want to give the rules, Adam, to today's proceedings?
We've got 3 rounds to Chris versus the fans. The questions will get progressively more difficult. If you get the question right, you move on to the next round. If you get it wrong, Chris gets a chance to answer it. If he gets it right, you're out. We go to the next caller. If he gets it wrong, we go right back to you, and you get to keep going. If you can make it through all 3 rounds, you're today's qualifier.
All right, let's play ball. I'll let you pick, Adam. It's your show today.
Master of ceremonies?
Yeah.
Let's go to Dan.
Oh, good old Dan the man. Hello,
hey,
Dan.
How's it going?
Very good. How are you?
Hey. Doing good.
All right. Adam,
assuming we don't have a first-time player, or he would have said so. So, here we go.
There we go.
Ozzie Smith's nickname was what?
Ozzie Smith. Got that one, Dan?
Wizard.
He was the wizard.
I was going for the Wizard of Oz, but I will take the wizard.
Oh, no, the wizard's a winner. That's a winner for sure. Very good, Adam. Nice job, Dan. The Wizard of Oz. Wizard. Yep. Ozzie Smith, man. Started his career with? Padres.
San Diego Padres.
Yeah. Can't say that was a bad trade. Padres got Gary Templeton out of it. But Cardinals got Ozzie Smith. I would have to give them the nod.
On to round number 2. Ready, Dan?
Ready.
Who was the first Major League Baseball player to pitch a ball over 100 miles per hour?
Wow. I knew he threw really hard. Let's guess and say Randy Johnson.
Randy Johnson. Chris for the steal.
It's a tough question. Nolan Ryan is on record. Bob Feller was way before Nolan Ryan. I just don't know that he was on official record. This is one of those ones where I have to try to figure out what Scraby's going for. I'm going to say Nolan Ryan, and if it's Bob Feller, I'll be mad.
Nolan Ryan.
That's my guess. Ah, I got it. Sorry about that, Dan.
You're not sorry.
I am. No, I always root for the contestants. I don't.
Thanks, Dan.
I don't lose on purpose, but I root for them. Bob Feller threw really, really hard back in the day, but I don't think they ever really, had a way to measure it.
Let's welcome on Terry.
Hey, Terry.
Hi. Hello.
Hello, Terry. Sorry?
Yeah. Hello.
I'm calling from well.
Calling from?
I don't know what that means.
Mission Valley.
Oh, Mission Valley.
There we go.
Perfect. Yeah. You're on the show, Terry. Yeah. Here we go.
First question. Hello, here we go.
Yeah.
Who currently leads all MLB players in home runs so far this season?
Here comes the judge.
Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge.
All rise. 24 home runs.
Really?
Woo-hoo.
He's gone on a roll. He had like zero at the end of April, and they were about ready to ship him out of New York. Good thing they didn't do that.
Got one coming here I'm fairly confident Chris will be able to get, so you better get this one here.
Yeah.
Don't give him a shot. Which boxer was the movie Raging Bull based on?
Tough.
Say a guess. Rocky Colavito.
Rocky Colavito was a baseball player. I think he's after Rocky Marciano. Jake LaMotta, I believe is the guy's name. Sorry about that, Terry. But thanks for playing, man. Good to have you on. From Mission Valley.
Alex here?
I like Alex in Cardiff.
Hello.
Alex is a tough competitor. Very tough competitor out of the fighting city of Cardiff, California. Cardiff by the sea.
Ready?
Go ahead, Adam.
Here we go.
Just anytime you want to jump in, Adam, just...
Well, you are opining. I was just going to let you keep going.
I know.
This is a little tougher, but I like this question, so I'm going with it. What was the name of the fictitious minor league baseball team in The Simpsons?
The Simpsons.
Isotope. Springfield Isotopes.
Yeah. Springfield Isotopes.
How about this? I would not have gotten that.
I didn't think you would.
I'm one of the rare people who never got into The Simpsons. And I've watched it a few times and thought it was hilarious.
But didn't
just
care
never
to
became
follow.
A Simpsons follower. That's weird.
All right.
Because just about everybody's, you know, into The Simpsons. Very good, Alex. You move on to round two.
Thanks. That was a fun one.
Which sporting event takes place each year on Memorial Day?
And I'm thinking golf. U.S. Open?
Chris for the steal.
For the steal. I think it's the Indy 500, but I think that's the day before Memorial Day, so I could be wrong.
Indy 500.
I think it's on the Sunday before Memorial Day, but, you know, who's counting?
Chris loves to go with the, you know, I really don't know, and then nails.
Well, I don't know because the question is wrong. Thanks, Alex. The question's wrong. It said, which event's on Memorial Day? It's not on Memorial Day. It's a Sunday before Memorial Day. Memorial Day's a Monday.
You know who will bring some smile to all of our faces? Gilberto.
Gilberto! Always good to see you.
Hola, muchachos. ¿Cómo están?
Oh, muy bien.
Muy bien. ¿Cómo están, muchachos?
Yeah, we miss Scraby, but getting along all right. Yeah.
Hey, Chris. The question should be Memorial Day weekend, and there's another racing event. That's the Monte Carlo Grand Prix. Grand Prix.
Ah, that I did not know. How about this? I've been to Monaco. Does that count for anything?
Yes, of course.
All right,
you've been
thank
to the
you.
Swimming pool?
Have I been where?
To the swimming pool.
I went to the casino in Monaco.
There you go.
That was pretty impressive.
Hope you win a lot. And guys, I don't care what Mike Shield says. Petco Park is a roller coaster park. Hopefully they'll finish on top.
All right, let's get
it's hard to argue Gilberto. With you, Gilberto. Hard to argue with you where the season's gone. All right, put him on the line.
All right, we got to start off easy. So we've even mentioned this earlier in the show. Which two teams are playing in the Stanley Cup Finals?
Oh, that's my Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers.
Ah. By the way, does anybody pronounce it with any better than Gilberto?
Gilberto.
The Florida Panthers. I love it. Very good, Gilberto.
Question number two.
Number two.
What are Canada's two national sports?
Two.
They have a summer national sport and a winter.
They do.
That's hockey and lacrosse.
Hockey and lacrosse. Boom.
Ding, ding. Hilberto.
On to
round. We sure it's not curling?
No, not curling.
All right.
Not according to what I'm looking at.
That's right. You're looking at Scraby's knowledge there. Just keep that in mind.
Like Scraby, okay?
That's right. That's right. You got to think like Scraby to win this game.
For the win.
For the win.
Who was the first baseball player to appear on a Wheaties box?
First player to appear in Wheaties. Oh, that's back in the early days.
Yes, it is.
I can't remember, but I'm going to go with Mary Lou Retton.
Who did he say?
I think he said Mary Lou Retton, who played for the Cleveland Guardians back in the day.
I don't know that Chris knows this one, but I could be wrong.
Lou Gehrig. Oh. I know this one.
Man.
I just had
it. Tried to stump him.
Sorry, Gilberto. Always great playing with you, buddy.
Hey. Nice talking to you guys.
A pleasure. We'll see you soon. Gilberto is one of the best.
All right. We are going to... Well, do you want to go for a tiebreaker here, Chris?
I don't.
No, you want to just keep rolling?
Sure. Go to Eduardo down there at the bottom. I'll give him a shot, then we'll make him the last contestant of the day before the tiebreaker.
How are you doing, Eduardo?
Hey, Eduardo.
Hey, doing great.
Hey, good to talk to you, sir. Best of luck.
Let's start. Question number one.
Here we go.
Who was the winning pitcher for the Padres on Friday night?
Friday night. Eduardo.
Waldron.
He went with Waldron. I'll go with King. Sorry, Eduardo. Thanks for playing. We'll catch you the next time. All right, let's do a tiebreaker. Today's tiebreaker person is... chosen from the front page of Baseball Reference, the most obscure, not obscure, but out of left field guy I can think of today, Jeff Kent.
Who do we want to dial up here, Chris? Who are you in the mood for?
I'm in the mood for, my dice says, go with Guy in Bay Park. The bottom.
Guy, how are you?
Hello, Guy.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
You know how the tiebreaker works?
Yeah, one and done, right?
Well, yes. I will. Adam will give me a question. I'll give you a number answer, and then you'll determine whether the actual answer is higher or lower.
Now, am I supposed to go with Jeff Kent? Is that what you're saying?
It's
got to
be a Jeff Kent question, yes.
Okay. Jeff Kent.
Right. Former, Giant, mostly.
How many stolen bases?
Good question, Adam.
Did Jeff Kent have in his career, which, let me say, lasted 17 seasons?
17 seasons. I don't.
Guy, Chris will give an answer and you will say higher or lower.
That's right. I think he averaged about 10 steals per season. So I'm going to go right with that. 170 steals for Jeff Kent.
Jeff Kent played 17 seasons. He had.
Wait, don't say. Guy's got to answer. Ooh, higher or lower?
I almost
gave it away.
One.
Guy, is it higher or lower, the actual answer? 170. Lower, he says.
Jeff Kent played 17 seasons. He had three seasons with double-digit steals. The height would be 1999 when he stole 13 bags. He stole 94 in his career.
Very good, Guy. It was lower. You are the winner. Ooh. Give them a round of applause if it's nearby. Stay on the line, Guy. You are winner of Chris Frisco. Oh, wow. What a big crowd today.
They're excited about
a little bigger crowd than usual today.
Our studio audience in here.
Yes, it's finally grown. Way to go, Guy. Congrats. 93, really. 94. I thought Kent would add a few more than that. But Guy is on top of that answer, so he gets Chris first. The fans today will check some traffic. Come back with a little more Gwen and Chris, and I will tell you about the worst sporting event of this past weekend, and it wasn't even close.
Ooh.
After traffic.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Gwen and Chris. 4:26 is the time. Chris Ella. Tony Gwynn Jr. is at Petco Park. That's where the Padres play the A's tonight. Sam Levitt's pregame show. We'll preview the game, the Eco Water SoCal pregame show, about an hour from right now. Then Tony and Jesse take over with the play-by-play story as the Padres look for their third win in the last four games. Either that or they try to avoid a second consecutive loss. However you want to put it, the Padres are 34 and 35. No matter what happens tonight, the game will not be as bad as this weekend's worst sporting event. Wasn't even close. I'm sure a lot of you saw it. I don't know if you hated it as much as I did. But game two of the NBA Finals last night, what a mess. These are supposed to be the two best teams in basketball. They shot less than 25% from the floor on three-pointers combined. Boston was 10 of 39. Dallas was worse, 6 of 26. Dallas couldn't even hit two-thirds of its free throws. Luka Doncic, one of the best players in NBA annals, had a triple-double with 32 points, 11 rebounds, and 11 assists, yet he was awful because he nearly had a quadruple-double with 8 turnovers, most of which cost Dallas the ball game. Kyrie Irving, another fantastic player, shot 28% from the floor. Jason Tatum, another all-NBA first-teamer, shot 28% from the floor. I mean, this was an embarrassment. And the thing that was worse about it was watching the telecast with Mike Breen, Doris Burke, and future Laker coach J.J. Redick fawning all over these players as if we were watching something fantastic. I don't know if the NBA, I guess they, you know, they have some say in the broadcasters, but I'd still like to believe that the broadcasters are able to have at least some sense of actually telling us what's going on. But nobody was willing to call out Doncic for his awful handling of the basketball and his 50% free throw shooting. Nobody called out Kyrie Irving for missing 15-foot jumper after 15-foot jumper as the game got away from Dallas. Nobody called out Jason Tatum for his 6-for-22 shooting, 1-for-7 on threes. All we kept hearing about is how brilliant his 12 assists were. The NBA, to me, will never be unwatchable. And I know a lot of say, well, it's unwatchable. I can't even watch it. So, you know, no, I didn't bother. It'll never be unwatchable to me because it's a major sport and I care and I love to watch the NBA Finals and I like to watch these star players play. But I'm going to say that the NBA is really difficult to watch in a lot of ways because no one, and I mean no one, watch for yourself in game three, nobody moves without the basketball. No one. A typical offense is dribble over half court, give the ball to Luka, and all four of the other Dallas players go and spot up and stand there. Or they give it to Kyrie, and the other four guys go stand there. Magic Johnson, who I think, you know, it's fair to listen to on stuff like this, guy was a pretty fair country player, said and tweeted last night, you watch Dallas play, you wonder how they ever got there in the first place. No one moves without the basketball. It's one of the oldest things in sports. As a little kid, you're taught, try to get open. In the NBA, they don't even try to get open. A good offensive set is Luka Doncic or Jason Tatum dribbling in two strides, stepping back two steps behind the three, and then missing a contested three-pointer. It gets kind of like watching paint dry after a while. This was a pathetic display of basketball, and I'm really getting tired of hearing how great the Celtic team is and how they could beat just about anybody. I can't imagine this Celtic team would even be able to last until the second half against the Showtime Lakers or the Jordan Bulls. This is awful basketball. The Tim Duncan Spurs would wipe the floor with these guys. Individually, they have amazing talent and skill. But the game of basketball has been set back by Joe Mazzulla and Jason Kidd and every other one of these current coaches who think that the game is now just a matchup of one-on-ones. The worst sporting event of the weekend. All right, we'll take a break, come back. Big Five is next. Tony rejoins the program. I'm Chris Ello. Adam Klugin for Scraby. Glad you're with us on 97.3 The Fan.
It's that time of the show when we check on the latest in sports. Only the most important topics and questions are brought to light.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
These news stories will astound and amaze you. The one, the only...
Oh, my God, who the hell cares?
The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, this is where she jumps in and talks about how great he is putting together a Big Five. But today, he's not putting together the Big Five. We remind you that Scrave is out today. But he's a gamer, Tony. He's going to be back tomorrow on the program one day after his successful shoulder surgery today. So we're happy Crazy. About that. He's doing well, but he'll be joining us. He'll be home tomorrow, but he will be part of the proceedings. Until then, we turn the Big Five over to the capable hands of the Atlanta Braves' biggest fan and Atlanta Falcons' biggest fan. The Brave thing I'm not so sure about. The Falcon thing I'm pretty sure about, Tony. I don't think there's anybody who's a bigger Falcon fan than him.
Who are the Braves? Are they a Major League Baseball team I'm unaware of?
They used to be. They used to be. Mr. Adam Klug, go for it, sir.
Hello, guys. Let's get
Count
after
us down,
it.
Yeah.
Number five.
All right, guys. Former Padres outfielder, now Yankees outfielder, Trent Grisham was the talk of Sunday Night Baseball as the Yankees played the Dodgers last night. Juan Soto's been out with a forearm injury, and so Trent Grisham played in his spot and batted fifth in the lineup. In the sixth inning of last night's game, Yankees fans chanted, "We want Soto," during Grisham's third plate appearance. Moments later, Grisham flipped those feelings, launching a fastball from Tyler Glasnow into the right field seats for a go-ahead three-run homer. It was Grisham's fifth hit of the season. Not having the greatest year. In response, in Grisham's next at-bat, the fans chanted, "We want Grisham." Aaron Judge, though, was not very happy after the game with how the fans treated Trent Grisham. His teammate saying, quote, "I wasn't too happy with it, but I think he made a good point. Got his point across with that homer." Guys, let's start with you, Tony. Can you blame fans for chanting that they wanted Soto last night?
Yeah, I can absolutely blame him, considering Soto wasn't even available. So you were just being a butthead is what they were being. They knew he could. It wasn't even a possibility for him to come in the game. He's hurt. He's on the IL. It would be he's ineligible to play, which is why he didn't have a uniform on. But, you know, is that who we want to be? I take this back to something we talked about last week. Is this what San Diego wants to be? They want to be that type of crowd? I thought that was I really can't use the word.
It was Bush League is what it was.
It was Bush League.
Yeah.
So I was happy for Trent. Like, I get he's struggling, and I get booing him if he comes to the plate. But trying to get somebody in the game that literally can't play, like he's not even an option to play. Because, by the way, if he was an option, Trent probably not even playing at this point, right? But so it was just, it just felt like it was a pile on at that point. So good for Trent, man, getting that knocking. Good for Judge standing up for his teammate too.
Yep, that's what you're supposed to do.
I think thought this was a thing though. I thought players and media were supposed to hold players accountable.
Well, I mean, but he's backing him up, and that's the thing that Tony's bringing up here is that, you know, the East Coast, they've got the good fans supposedly. Well, do they really? I mean, again, that's what Tony's asking, and I think it's a fair question. Are these the kind of fans that we want to be, or that we strive to be here in Southern California, where players and media and people alike say that we're soft and we're not hard enough on our guys? And, you know, Matt Kemp went and said, you know, the media doesn't hold players accountable enough. So is this what we want to do? Do we want to boo our own guys like that and chant against them?
Not so, even just boo.
Yeah.
Booing is fine, but yeah. We want Soto, and Soto is literally got a torn, strained forearm and can't swing a bat.
Yeah. No, I think it's a really interesting thing, and that this is the line that we walk. I mean, we try to be fair, and I think Southern California fans, media, do a pretty good job of being fair. Yeah. Whereas New York fans and media, they're not always fair. And people seem to say that's okay, and the question that we have is, really, is it okay? Because that's no way to treat any player. And, you know, if Tyler Glasnow wasn't the ace of my fantasy baseball team and lost that game because of that pitch, I'd have been a little happier for Trent Grisham. But you got to be happy for Trent Grisham in that situation. I mean, and you and I both know, Tony, you know, boo him at your own peril, because, you know, he can walk into one at any time. Just ask the New York Mets in the playoffs a couple years ago.
I believe 3 of his 5 hits this season are home
runs.
Well,
look, I mean, Trent can go deep. And, you know, maybe Glasnow got into the chanting and figured it was, like, easy. I just sneak a fastball by him, and it didn't work. So
I still want to see the experiment where we get, like, I don't know, we'll just say, like, 50 people to just walk in, like, a regular work setting and go, you know, instead of, you know, let's say Scraby's on the board, he's struggling on the board. bring 50 people in there and go, we want Adam, even though Scraby had surgery on his shoulder, he can't move his arm, right? It's just like, come on, man, that's not even it right there.
Yeah, well, good for Trent Grisham is the bottom line. But you're right, I'm glad you brought up the point, Tony, because I think it's deserves to be recognized for sure.
Yeah.
Number 4.
All right, guys, let's get into the latest controversy and drama surrounding Caitlin Clark, the number one pick in April's WNBA draft. The U.S. Olympic roster was released, and Caitlin Clark was not one of the 12 players on the roster. There's been a lot of debate about whether or not should she be or shouldn't she be on the roster. Is she one of the 12 best players, or do you put her on because of her media and her popularity? She was not on the roster, and yesterday she spoke about that.
What was your reaction when you saw the USA team yesterday, the roster come out?
Yeah, I think I'm excited for the girls that are on the team. I know it's the most competitive team in the world, and I know it could have gone either way of me being on the team, me not being on the team. So, you know, I'm excited for them. I'm going to be rooting them on to win gold. I was a kid that grew up watching the Olympics. So, it'll be fun to watch them.
What was your level of disappointment not kind of hearing your name?
Honestly, no disappointment. Like, I think it just gives you something to work for. You know, that's a dream. You know, hopefully one day I can be there. And I think it's just a little more motivation. You remember that. And, you know, hopefully in 4 years, when 4 years comes back around, you know, I can be there.
All right, guys, let's start with you, Chris. Tony went first last time. Where do you fall on this? Should Caitlin Clark have been on the Olympic roster?
Well, the first thing I fall on is that, you know, whether you like her or not, and I don't know why people don't like her, right, but for those who don't, that's class right
yes,
there.
It is.
I'm sorry.
Yes,
if you have a problem with her and don't find her response to be classy, then, you know, there's no pleasing you out there. So, you know, let's start with that. I mean, she had to be really disappointed. I mean, she had to feel like she had a good opportunity to be on there. That said, I'm split here, and yeah, I don't normally come down the middle too often. You know, we had Stacey Terry Hudson on earlier to talk a little bit about this from San Diego State, and I just don't know quite where I fall. I mean, a lot of me says the best 12 players should be on there, but there is a part of me that says, what would be the problem with sticking her in there and drawing a whole lot more attention to an already growing sport of women's basketball? There's something, you know, there too. So, you know, the competitor in me says the best 12 ought to be on the team. But, you know, I mean, even the dream team, you know, way back when in 92 included Christian Laettner when he was coming out of Duke. You know, I don't remember how much he got to play. I think he probably got to play a lot because they were winning by...
He didn't play at all.
Oh, he didn't play at all?
No.
Okay. So, you know, they could have put her on there. And I heard some people say, well, maybe they didn't want to put her on there and then be criticized for not playing her enough.
Yeah.
But it's a tough one for me because I really think women's basketball is so on the rise right now. And I feel like they should strike when the iron's hot.
Tony, where do you fall?
First, I think every step of the way Caitlin Clark has handled this, I think, with class. And I love the way her thought process and not making it, and now that being something that's almost a chip on her shoulder that she can use to get better. I think Chris is right. If you have, I mean, that is exactly how you would want any young man or young woman to respond to something like this. I also have split down the middle, and it's layered, right? I think the sport is growing, and anytime you can have eyeballs to your sport or bring new eyeballs to your sport, you definitely want to do it. And I think this is so much different than maybe the discussion that's going on in the actual WNBA. I think she isn't the top 12 in the WNBA, and I don't think that it's all that close. However, I do think there is some merit to having her on the squad for an Olympic setting where the world is literally watching your sport. I don't think it makes a bearing. I mean, it doesn't have any, it will have any bearing in terms of if it's going to help them win or not, because I don't know that she would have played that much. But it'd be made that she could have been on the team for that reason. Now, I don't know if that's a reason Caitlin would want to be on the team. She comes off as a person that maybe wouldn't, you know, would have obviously treasured the fact of being on the U.S. team and representing her country, but I'm sure she would, you know, would want to play. And so, I don't know. This one's right down the middle for me. I can see why she didn't make the team, but I can also make a really compelling argument of why she should have been on the team regardless. But again, if you're putting her on, that means somebody who's deserving is getting left off. And how does that then resonate when the league gets back together for the WNBA? I don't know.
She's polarizing no matter what the situation is.
Did you not hear me play the number three number?
I did, and I talk over it all the time.
Here we go again. Number three. There was a lot of talk during the last NFL season about Mike Tomlin's future in Pittsburgh, but fear not, Steeler fans, unless you aren't a fan of Tomlin, the NFL's longest tenured head coach will continue to be, as he's agreed to a contract extension with the Black and Yellow through the 2027 season. Chris, where does Mike Tomlin rank among all current active NFL head coaches in your mind?
Oh, man, we've talked about this so much, and you're sending a fastball, lobbing a fastball right down the middle to both Tony and
yep.
I, because we both love this guy.
So do I. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I put him first or second. Andy Reid's got to get the nod right now because he's winning all these championships. But I think what Mike Tomlin does year in, year out with, you know, a less than stellar squad is phenomenal. I love the fact that he holds people accountable, mostly himself. I think he's smart. I think he's the right mental, you know, frame, brings that to football, and he's good for the game. So I like Mike Tomlin. He's my top one or two. And, you know, I think the Steelers, you know, are going to be great for a long, long time, as long as they have them. It's interesting though, that our very own market manager here at the Odyssey, Palace, Michael Valenzuela, is a lifelong Steelers fan. And he tells me he's not a fan of Tomlin.
A lot of fans, a lot of Steeler fans.
He says that he thinks Tomlin's kind of run his course and you can't get him over the hump. My whole thing is be careful what you wish for, because if you want somebody other than Tomlin, there's no guarantee they're going to be any better.
It's been 6 or 7 years since they've won a playoff game.
Well, okay. So, you know, he's still there with what Kenny Pickett and whoever else he's had to work with. So I'm still a fan.
Tony, where do you rank Mike Tomlin among active, current NFL head coaches?
Well, you know, I think they should give the people what they want. They should fire Tomlin.
Yeah,
so
really.
So they can get a high pick and then kind of see how this carousel goes. I think it's ridiculous, especially the people in Pittsburgh, right? Because what's happened is they've been spoiled by Bill Cowher and then Mike Tomlin. And they got a couple Super Bowls in it. Mind you, all with the same quarterback. They got it with Ben Roethlisberger, right? So, like, there isn't – if you don't have the quarterback, it's an uphill fight. The problem is that Tomlin takes your mediocre roster that you put together pretty much over the last 6 or 7 years that we're talking about, and he somehow gets you to the playoffs or gets you to 500, which playoffs is good. Anything can happen, but also it doesn't leave you for being able to get that quarterback you're looking for. And so – they've been in search now. They got probably very fortunate, at least as it looks right now, to be able to get a veteran like Russell Wilson and a young quarterback. What's my man's name?
Justin Fields.
Justin Fields.
Yeah.
So you may not end up having to do that after all. Now let's see what Mike Tomlin does with, I would say, the best quarterbacks he's had in his room since Ben Roethlisberger. So I think this is a good sign. I think the one thing I know that the Pittsburgh Steelers owners do and front office does is they know what they're doing. That's why they've only had to hire two coaches in the past however many years. So I'm going to go with the Steelers brass on this one.
Number two.
Let's go right into Tony's wheelhouse on this one. Is the big news of the day comes from the NBA with UConn head coach Dan Hurley spurning his Lakers, turning down a 6-year, $70 million contract to become their head coach, and he's going to instead attempt a three-peat at UConn. Tony, this is a two-part question. Okay. Who would you hire if you were the Lakers, and who will be hired by the Lakers?
Not J.J. Redick.
He doesn't like that one.
I just want somebody, and it's nothing against J.J. I think he's an extremely intelligent basketball man just listening to him talk. I just want somebody who's got some experience doing it. Not just fresh out of a chair, you know, analyzing it all. That's the first part. Second part, I must say, what was the second part of the question? I'm sorry.
I asked you who you would hire, and I asked you who you think will be hired.
Yeah, so I don't know who I would hire. Who I think will be hired is probably J.J. So there's that. I will say this.
We've seen it work with Steve Kerr, by the way.
Huh?
We saw it work with Steve Kerr coming right out of the broadcast booth.
And Steve Pat Riley.
Kerr, but Steve Kerr was Steve Kerr was an assistant on Pop's staff at one point.
And he had been a GM as well, so he at least
right.
Seen
so
that
he's
side.
Had he had multiple hats that he had worn. I'll say this, and this might sound like I'm hating, but I think this is gonna be a huge mistake for Dan Hurley. If I'm a college coach, I'm trying to get until they figure out how everything's gonna work, I'm trying to get the hell out of college sports. Because there can't be any longevity in that system the way it is right now with guys being able to. He's been fortunate to bring you know, we talk about bringing the right kind of guys in, and it's all working, and he seemingly has gotten it right. But eventually, you're going to get some wrong, and in college basketball or in college sports, when you get something wrong, it could be a big detriment in terms of people just picking up and going to different programs, getting paid elsewhere. I just think, at this point, there might even be more stability in pro sports right now than there is in college. I know he's riding a wave right now, two-peat, but let's say, you know, three-peat hasn't been done since Wooden?
Nah, yeah, right.
Since Wooden? So, I mean, unless he's about to pull that off again, I think in 5 years he's going to look back at this and he's going to be regretful that he didn't take this job.
Tony, anytime you can turn down Southern California for Stores, Connecticut, you've got to
have at it, buddy.
Who would you hire? Who will be hired?
Who would I hire? I would have kept Darvin Ham.
There you go.
That's what I would have done.
Too.
I mean, I think, you know, now he's going to the Bucks, from what I hear, as an assistant to Doc Rivers. But, you know, I think the Lakers jumped the gun. You know, I think they had their man, and, you know, they let him go. The job he did a couple of years ago, getting them to the Western Final, was really impressive. And it's obviously, you know, they couldn't get past Denver, but I liked him. So I don't know who they're hiring, probably J.J. Redick. There's got to be another name somewhere along the line. But I don't really understand Dan Hurley's thinking either. A three-peat is not – it's historical now, but it's a long way away from a seven-peat, and that's what John Wooden did. So I don't know that Dan Hurley's going to be able to break that kind of record. And, yeah, college basketball is it's a crazy situation right now. I don't know, Dan, what you're doing. Unless they're giving him more money that we don't know about. I think it's about a $2 million difference. Maybe he's making even more.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of the show when we check on the latest in sports. Only the most important topics and questions are brought to light.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
These news stories will astound and amaze you. The one, the only.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, this is where she jumps in and talks about how great he is putting together a Big Five, but today he's not putting together the Big Five. We remind you that Scrabe is out today, but he's a gamer, Tony. He's going to be back tomorrow on the program one day after his successful shoulder surgery today. So we're happy about that. He's doing well, but he'll be joining us. He'll be home tomorrow, but he will be part of the proceedings. Until then, we turn the Big Five over to the capable hands of the Atlanta Braves' biggest fan and Atlanta Falcons' biggest fan. The Brave thing I'm not so sure about. The Falcon thing I'm pretty sure about, Tony. I don't think there's anybody who's a bigger Falcon fan than him.
Who are the Braves? Are they a Major League Baseball team I'm unaware of?
They used to be. They used to be. Mr. Adam Klug, go for it, sir.
Hello, guys. Let's get
after it. Count
us
down, yeah.
Number five.
All right, guys. Former Padres outfielder, now Yankees outfielder, Trent Grisham, was the talk of Sunday Night Baseball as the Yankees played the Dodgers last night. Juan Soto's been out with a forearm injury, and so Trent Grisham played in his spot and batted fifth in the lineup. In the sixth inning of last night's game, Yankees fans chanted, "We want Soto," during Grisham's third plate appearance. Moments later, Grisham flipped those feelings, launching a fastball from Tyler Glasnow into the right field seats for a go-ahead three-run homer. It was Grisham's fifth hit of the season. Not having the greatest year. In response, in Grisham's next at-bat, the fans chanted, "We want Grisham." Aaron Judge, though, was not very happy after the game with how the fans treated Trent Grisham. His teammate saying, quote, "I wasn't too happy with it, but I think he made a good point. Got his point across with that homer." Guys, let's start with you, Tony. Can you blame fans for chanting that they wanted Soto last night?
Yeah, I can absolutely blame him, considering Soto wasn't even available. So you were just being a butthead is what they were doing. They knew he could. It wasn't even a possibility for him to come into the game. He's hurt. He's on the IL. It would be he's ineligible to play, which is why he didn't have a uniform on. But, you know, is that who we want to be? I take this back to something we talked about last week. Is this what San Diego wants to be. They want to be that type of crowd. I thought I really can't use the word.
It was Bush League is what it was.
It was Bush League.
Yeah.
So I was happy for Trent. Like, I get he's struggling, and I get booing him if he comes to the plate. But trying to get somebody in the game that literally can't play, like he's not even an option to play. Because, by the way, if he was an option, Trent probably's not even playing at this point, right? But so it just feel like it was a pile on at that point. So good for Trent, man, getting that knocking. Good for Judge standing up for his teammate too.
Yep, that's what you're supposed to do.
I thought this was a thing though. I thought players and media were supposed to hold players accountable.
Well, I mean, but he's backing them up, and that's the thing that Tony's bringing up here is that, you know, the East Coast, they've got the good fans supposedly. Well, do they really? I mean, again, that's what Tony's asking, and I think it's a fair question. Are these the kind of fans that we want to be, or that we strive to be here in Southern California, where players and media and people alike say that we're soft and we're not hard enough on our guys? And, you know, Matt Kemp went and said, you know, the media doesn't hold players accountable enough. So is this what we want to do? Do we want to boo our own guys like that and chant against them?
Not so, even just boo.
Yeah.
Booing is fine, but
yeah.
We want Soto when Soto is literally got a torn, strained forearm and can't swing a bat.
Yeah. No, I think it's a really interesting thing, and that this is the line that we walk. I mean, we try to be fair, and I think Southern California fans, media, do a pretty good job of being fair.
Yeah.
Whereas New York fans and media, they're not always fair. And people seem to say that's okay. And the question that we have is, really, is it okay? Because that's no way to treat any player. And, you know, if Tyler Glasnow wasn't the ace of my fantasy baseball team and lost that game because of that pitch, I'd have been a little happier for Trent Grisham. But you got to be happy for Trent Grisham in that situation. I mean, and you and I both know, Tony, you know, boo him at your own peril because...
That's,
you know,
true.
He can walk into one at any time. Just ask the New York Mets in the playoffs a couple years ago.
I believe three of his five hits this season are home
runs. Well, look, I mean, Trent can go deep. And, you know, maybe Glasnow got into the chanting and figured it was, like, easy. I just sneak a fastball by him, and it didn't work. So
I still want to see the experiment where we get, like, I don't know, we'll just say, like, 50 people to just walk in, like, a regular work setting and go, you know, instead of, you know, let's say Scraby's on the board. He's struggling on the board. You know, bring 50 people in there and go, we want Adam, even though Scraby had surgery on his shoulder. He can't move his arm, right? It's just like, come on, man. That's not even it right there.
Yeah. Well, good for Trent Grisham is the bottom line. But you're right. I'm glad you brought up the point, Tony, because I think it's deserves to be recognized for sure.
Yeah.
Number four.
All right, guys, let's get into the latest controversy and drama surrounding Caitlin Clark, the number one pick in April's WNBA draft. The U.S. Olympic roster was released, and Caitlin Clark was not one of the 12 players on the roster. There's been a lot of debate about whether or not should she be or shouldn't she be on the roster. Is she one of the 12 best players, or do you put her on because of her media and her popularity? She was not on the roster, and yesterday she spoke about that.
Saw the USA team yesterday, the roster come out.
Yeah, I think I'm excited for the girls that are on the team. I know it's the most competitive team in the world, and I know it could have gone either way of me being on the team, me not being on the team. So, you know, I'm excited for them. I'm going to be rooting them on to win gold. I was a kid that grew up watching the Olympics. So, yeah, it'll be fun to watch them.
What was your level of disappointment not having your name?
Honestly, no disappointment. Like, I think it just gives you something to work for. You know, that's a dream. You know, hopefully one day I can be there. And I think it's just a little more motivation. You remember that. And, you know, hopefully in 4 years, when 4 years comes back around, you know, I can be there.
All right, guys, let's start with you, Chris. Tony went first last time. Where do you fall on this? Should Caitlin Clark have been on the Olympic roster?
Well, the first thing I fall on is that, you know, whether you like her or not, and I don't know why people don't like her,
right,
but for those who don't, that's class right there.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Yes,
if you have a problem with her and don't find her response to be classy, then, you know, there's no pleasing you out there. So, you know, let's start with that. I mean, she had to be really disappointed. I mean, she had to feel like she had a good opportunity to be on there. That said, I'm split here, and yeah, I don't normally come down the middle too often. You know, we had Stacey Terry Hudson on earlier to talk a little bit about this from San Diego State, and I just don't know quite where I fall. I mean, a lot of me says the best 12 players should be on there, but there is a part of me that says, what would be the problem with sticking her in there and drawing a whole lot more attention to an already growing sport of women's basketball? There's something, you know, there too. So, you know, the competitor in me says the best 12 ought to be on the team. But, you know, I mean, even the dream team, you know, way back when in 92 included Christian Laettner when he was coming out of Duke. You know, I don't remember how much he got to play. I think he probably got to play a lot because they were winning by...
He didn't play at all.
Oh, he didn't play at all?
No.
Okay, so, you know, they could have put her on there, and I heard some people say, well, maybe they didn't want to put her on there and then be criticized for not playing her enough.
Yeah.
But I it's a tough one for me because I really think women's basketball is so on the rise right now, and I feel like they should strike when the iron's hot.
Tony, where do you fall?
First, I think every step of the way Caitlin Clark has handled this, I think, with class. And I love the way her thought process and not making it, and now that being something that's almost a chip on her shoulder that she can use to get better. I think Chris is right. If you have, I mean, that is exactly how you would want any young man or young woman to respond to something like this. I also have split down the middle, and it's layered, right? I think the sport is growing, and anytime you can have eyeballs to your sport or bring new eyeballs to your sport, you definitely want to do it. And I think this is so much different than maybe the discussion that's going on in the actual WNBA. I think she isn't the top 12 in the WNBA, and I don't think that it's all that close. However, I do think there is some merit to having her on the squad for an Olympic setting where the world is literally watching your sport. I don't think it makes a bearing. I mean, it doesn't have any. It will have any bearing in terms of if it's going to help them win or not. Because I don't know that she would have played that much, but it could be made that she could have been on the team for that reason. Now I don't know if that's a reason Caitlin would want to be on the team. She comes off as a person that maybe wouldn't. You know, would have obviously treasured the fact of being on the U.S. team and representing her country, but I'm sure she would, you know, would want to play. And so, I don't know. This one's right down the middle for me. I can see why she didn't make the team, but I can also make a really compelling argument of why she should have been on the team regardless. But again, if you're putting her on, that means somebody who's deserving is getting left off. And how does that then resonate when the league gets back together for the WNBA? I don't know.
She's polarizing no matter what the situation is.
Did you not hear me play the number three number?
I did, and I talk over it all the time.
Here we go again. Number three. There was a lot of talk during the last NFL season about Mike Tomlin's future in Pittsburgh, but fear not, Steeler fans, unless you aren't a fan of Tomlin, the NFL's longest tenured head coach will continue to be, as he's agreed to a contract extension with the Black and Yellow through the 2027 season. Chris, where does Mike Tomlin rank among all current active NFL head coaches in your mind?
Oh, man, we've talked about this so much, and you're sending a fastball, lobbing a fastball right down the middle to both Tony and
yep.
I, because we both love this guy.
So do I.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I put him first or second. Andy Reid's got to get the nod right now because he's winning all these championships. But I think what Mike Tomlin does year in, year out with, you know, a less than stellar squad is phenomenal. I love the fact that he holds people accountable, mostly himself. I think he's smart. I think he's the right mental, you know, frame, brings that to football, and he's good for the game. So I like Mike Tomlin. He's my top one or two. And, you know, I think the Steelers, you know, are going to be great for a long, long time, as long as they have them. It's interesting though, that our very own market manager here at the Odyssey, Palace, Michael Valenzuela, is a lifelong Steelers fan. And he tells me he's not a fan of Tomlin.
A lot of fans, a lot of Steelers
fans. He says that he thinks Tomlin's kind of run his course and you can't get him over the hump. My whole thing is be careful what you wish for, because if you want somebody other than Tomlin, there's no guarantee they're going to be any better.
It's been 6 or 7 years since they've won a playoff game.
Well, okay. So, you know, he's still there with what Kenny Pickett and whoever else he's had to work with. So I'm still a fan.
Tony, where do you rank Mike Tomlin among active, current NFL head coaches?
Well, you know, I think they should give the people what they want. They should fire Tomlin.
Yeah,
so
really.
So they can get a high pick and then kind of see how this carousel goes. I think it's ridiculous, especially the people in Pittsburgh, right? Because what's happened is they've been spoiled by Bill Cowher and then Mike Tomlin. And they got a couple Super Bowls in it. Mind you, all with the same quarterback. They got it with Ben Roethlisberger, right? So, like, there isn't – if you don't have the quarterback, it's an uphill fight. The problem is that Tomlin takes your mediocre roster that you put together pretty much over the last 6 or 7 years that we're talking about, and he somehow gets you to the playoffs or gets you to 500, which playoffs is good. Anything can happen, but also it doesn't leave you for being able to get that quarterback you're looking for. And so they've been in search now. They got probably very fortunate, at least as it looks right now, to be able to get a veteran like Russell Wilson and a young quarterback. What's my man's name?
Justin Fields.
Justin Fields.
Yeah.
So you may not end up having to do that after all. Now let's see what Mike Tomlin does with, I would say, the best quarterbacks he's had in his room since Ben Roethlisberger. So I think this is a good sign. I think the one thing I know that the Pittsburgh Steelers owners do and front office does is they know what they're doing. That's why they've only had to hire two coaches in the past however many years. So I'm going to go with the Steelers brass on this one.
Number two.
Let's go right into Tony's wheelhouse on this one. Is the big news of the day comes from the NBA with UConn head coach Dan Hurley spurning his Lakers, turning down a 6-year, $70 million contract to become their head coach, and he's going to instead attempt a three-peat at UConn. Tony, this is a two-part question. Okay. Who would you hire if you were the Lakers, and who will be hired by the Lakers?
Not J.J. Redick.
He doesn't like that one.
I just want somebody, and there's nothing against J.J. I think he's an extremely intelligent basketball man, just listening to him talk. I just want somebody who's got some experience doing it. Not just fresh out of a chair, you know, analyzing it all. That's the first part. Second part, I must say, what was the second part of the question? I'm sorry.
I asked you who you would hire, and I asked you who you think will be hired.
Yeah, so I don't know who I would hire. Who I think will be hired is probably J.J. So there's that. I will say this.
We've seen it work with Steve Kerr, by the way.
Huh?
We saw it work with Steve Kerr coming right out of the broadcast booth.
And Steve Pat Riley.
Kerr, but Steve Kerr was on. Steve Kerr was an assistant on Pop's staff at one point.
And he had been a GM as well, so he at least
right.
Seen
so
that
he's
side.
Had he had multiple hats that he had worn. I'll say this, and this might sound like I'm hating, but I think this is going to be a huge mistake for Dan Hurley. If I'm a college coach, I'm trying to get until they figure out how everything's going to work. I'm trying to get the hell out of college sports. Because there can't be any longevity in that system the way it is right now with guys being able to. He's been fortunate to bring you know, we talk about bringing the right kind of guys in, and it's all working, and he seemingly has gotten it right. But eventually, you're going to get some wrong, and in college basketball or in college sports, when you get something wrong, it could be a big detriment in terms of people just picking up and going to different programs, getting paid elsewhere. I just think, at this point, there might even be more stability in pro sports right now than there is in college. I know he's riding a wave right now, two-peat, but let's say, you know, three-peat hasn't been done since Wooden?
Nah, yeah, right.
Since Wooden? So, I mean, unless he's about to pull that off again, I think in 5 years he's going to look back at this and he's going to be regretful that he didn't take this job.
Tony, anytime you can turn down Southern California for Stores, Connecticut, you've got to
have at it, buddy.
Who would you hire? Who will be hired?
Who would I hire? I would have kept Darvin Ham.
There you go.
That's what I would have done.
Too.
I mean, they, I think, you know, now he's going to the Bucks, from what I hear, as an assistant to Doc Rivers. But, you know, I think the Lakers jumped the gun. You know, I think they had their man, and, you know, they let him go. The job he did a couple of years ago, getting them to the Western Final, was really impressive. And it's obviously, you know, they couldn't get past Denver, but I liked him. So I don't know who they're hiring, probably J.J. Redick. There's got to be another name somewhere along the line. But I don't really understand Dan Hurley's thinking either. A three-peat is not – it's historical now, but it's a long way away from a seven-peat, and that's what John Wooden did. So I don't know that Dan Hurley's going to be able to break that kind of record. And, yeah, college basketball is it's a crazy situation right now. I don't know, Dan, what you're doing. Unless they're giving him more money that we don't know about. I think it's about a $2 million difference. Maybe he's making even more.
I mean, listen, I get it. He's created something that is very hard to create. I think it's harder to sustain it in college sports with the system not actually having a system right now. You know what I'm saying? These kids want to get some change. They want to get the bag. And, you know, that's what you're at mercy of. I know he's talking about, you know, recruiting guys that are, you know, want to be a player and want to be in the system and this and that and the other. All right, well, you know, I know I got four kids of my own. I know how that age group operates. They don't operate on the same stuff that we did as kids. So, you know, good luck to them.
Tony was going to be rooting for him, it sounds like.
Number one.
All right, one of the wildest plays you'll ever see in a Major League Baseball game happened yesterday in the Blue Jays-A's game in Oakland on a foul pop-up towards Toronto's, I'm using air quotes here for us in the radio studio, dugout. A's first baseman Tyler Soderstrom chased the pop-up, and Blue Jays starter, who was not in the game, Yusei Kikuchi, stood up and ran out of the way, and he ended up colliding with Soderstrom and knocking him off his feet, which resulted in the batter being called out even though the ball was not caught. In Oakland, the players kind of sit on the field, like on a bench on the field, rather than inside of a dugout. That's why I used air quotes. Chris, what's the wildest or wackiest play you've ever seen in a Major League Baseball game?
Oh, boy, that's a good one there. I mean, I felt for Kikuchi a little bit. Now, after this was over, didn't it? I mean, from what I saw in the highlight, it looked like the Blue Jays were upset about something. Maybe
he got called for interference.
Because really think they had an argument there?
Called pass interference.
I don't think they thought they had an argument or not, but that's what they were upset about.
Yeah, I don't know. That's funny. You're kind of hitting me, you know, out of nowhere. It seems like so many plays are running through my mind. Batters or base runners mostly, you know, being deked, running from first to second base, and then being thrown back out at first base. Those kinds of fun plays. I don't have a great one.
I'll give you one. How about the home run ball going off Jose Canseco's head?
Off his head. Yeah, that's a classic moment for sure. But this one was pretty strange. I must admit, I imagine the first baseman for the A's was just totally flipped out because there's no way he could have expected there to be contact in that situation. So, yeah, baseball, I don't know what they say, Tony. You do 162 games a year. I don't know if you see 162 different things, but it seems like there's something close to new every day.
Tony, anything stick out to you?
I mean, I've played too many games. I can't remember of something crazy that stands out to me, at least right off, not at the top of my head. But that Kikuchi thing was almost in tears, man. I was in tears because, you know, a lot of times dudes ain't paying attention, right? And my guess is he wasn't paying attention when that ball hit in the air. He just knew it was coming down somewhere because people were scattering around him. But the thing that I can't get out of my head is why did he decide that running towards the field of play
was a good idea?
Was the answer to this? I mean, he could have ran sideways into the dugout tunnel. He could have even ran to the outskirts of the field. He decided to run straight towards first base, it looked like. I just thought that was hilarious, man.
That was a good one.
That's all you could just say. Pitchers.
Pitchers are a little crazy.
My favorite part was Kikuchi was on all fours. Man had no belt on, had no jersey on. He was just out there being a pitcher. It was just hilarious to me.
I don't know. I'll think of one play that I remember seeing as a little kid in Little League. This doesn't quite answer your question, but, you know, in Little League, when the ball gets into the outfield, anything can happen. Kid hit a line drive into the right field. The right fielder picked it up. And instead of throwing it into the infield, he threw it to the center fielder, hoping that maybe he'd do something with
it. Didn't something similar happen with Manny Ramirez?
Hang on a second.
Johnny Damon and Manny Ramirez.
Yeah, but the only difference here is that the center fielder didn't know what to do, so he threw it back to the right fielder.
That's hilarious.
Now that,
I just thought of one, too, by the way.
Okay, go.
And you guys can probably, you could probably YouTube this. It was a play with Jerry Harrison Jr. and the Dodgers. It's like a routine ground ball. The infielder throws it to Todd Helton. Helton is, I swear to God, like 5 feet from first base. Like, he can't reach it at all. So he catches the ball and just kind of turns, and the umpire calls Jerry Harrison out. I mean, his foot is nowhere near the base. There's no replay at this point.
Right.
So he just had to wear it. It was so bad he couldn't even be mad.
Angel Hernandez?
I don't think it was.
We're piling on now. All right. Baseball's fun, though. Let's be honest about that.
Is.
There's some crazy bloopers over the years. All right. There's our Big Five, the Adam Klug edition. Take a break. Come back. Get you ready. More on tonight's game between the Padres and the Oakland Athletics. Final hour ahead on Gwynn and Chris.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.